I'm Gab, he's Jules. There's blue skies over West London because the Euros have reached the final four stage.
It's coming home.
I don't know, more than that. It's time. It's time. It's time. It's final four time at the Euros. That is a shout out, of course, to Vader, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. We'll be looking forward to the semifinals. We'll be talking about what's going on. Sancho signing, Cristiano's agent, George Mendes, finding time to go visit Juventus. We'll be talking about all that.
Yeah.
But let's go back. Let's start with a look back. And let's start with the game that Frank Leboeuf, you agree? Very wise man.
Very wise, indeed.
Won a World Cup, won a Euros, right?
He knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
And he said that this was the final of the tournament, Italy against Belgium. So if it was the final and Italy won the game, why are we playing these other games? Why doesn't Italy just take a World Cup, just take the Euros, and we have enough World Cups at home, and just go home, and then you guys can
with your medals. Yeah, what? You're right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure Frank understands the brackets and how it works and what half of the draw, etc.
I like his idea, though.
I like his idea, too. And in fairness, this could have been a great final, would have been a great final. And I also think that that was one of the games of the tournament. Maybe not as spectacular and crazy than the Spain-Croatia or even France-Switzerland. But I think in terms of quality, this is maybe the best game that we've had. Two top teams, of course, top managers, different tactics. And in the end, I thought Italy were impressive in the way they played in midfield. I thought the way they defended in the second half, and we can talk about Chiellini coming back. You and I were not so keen.
No.
And yet, it was a very, very convincing performance in a game that suited him to defend deep in the second half. This is the kind of stuff that he loves. But I just thought I was really impressed with Italy again in the performance that they put out against Belgium.
Yeah, what impressed me was, all right, Ciro Immobile obviously not having a good day with his finishing. Now, I thought, especially relative to other games, he really busted his rear end. I mean, he always does.
He always does, yeah.
In terms of getting around, I wondered, okay, you're obviously not finishing at all, and you were terrible in that sense, and on a different day, you would have had a couple goals.
Yeah.
I wondered myself, why didn't he take him off sooner? I asked around, and the answer was, this is somebody who really, more than most, really lives on confidence.
Yeah.
You know, whatever he's very much affected by what happened before. And so the sense was, if you take him off now, that means you're going to have a difficult time with him in the next game. So best to keep going.
Yeah.
Maybe he scores a goal. It didn't work out that way, but I thought the supporting cast around them did very well. Chiesa, Insigne, obviously with a goal, the midfield. Mm-hmm. I got to give a shout out to Spinazzola as well.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaker. I thought he was tremendous. He also saved Lukaku off the line as well. When you have somebody who gives you so much going forward and is also that fast with his defensive recoveries, that fearless.
Yeah.
And it is a heartbreaker. It's an Achilles injury.
I still don't understand how that happened, Gab. Is it because he slips?
No.
You could see the way he's running. And he doesn't have to run for that ball at that time of the game either.
I think it's just the mechanics. I think I don't think it was the mechanics. I think he's suffered that injury before.
So he was weak. He was fragile.
He's fragile. Yeah. He's had a string of serious injuries, and it's just something that happens. And that's obviously a big blow.
Yeah, it's huge.
I look back and I was surprised. I mean, you weren't. You spoke to Roberto. He kind of told you to do this. Roberto Martinez in this case. I was a bit surprised that Belgium didn't take the game to Italy earlier, just with the quality they had. I know there was no Hazard, but it looked to me they defended a bit deeper. Maybe that was a way to make up for the fact that Alderweireld, Vertonghen and Vermaelen obviously aren't as quick as they once were.
Yeah.
But I think it had the effect of kind of loosing them on the counterattack. And to me, and only watching on television, Kevin De Bruyne off the ball really struggled to get on the pitch when they weren't in possession and gave you very little defensively relative to all the work he does, you know, for City when he's fully fit. On the ball, though, I mean, the quality, both chances that they had in the first half hour, the one where he ran, he struck that so sweet, struck that perfectly, and it was an incredible save, I thought, from Donnarumma.
Yeah, I agree.
The other one, he set up Lukaku, took on to Chiellini and shot. That was another good save. I really thought those were really the two Belgium chances from the first half.
They were, Gab. I still don't think that De Bruyne was fully fit. And then he said after the game that he had that tear in his ankle ligament, which is the problem he had before the PSG game in the Champions League semi-final, by the way, that he suffered against Chelsea in the semi-final at Wembley. I don't know what difference it would have made had he been fully fit and Hazard has been there fully fit. I thought Doku, and we will mention him a bit later, played great considering he's still only so young and never played at that kind of level. But maybe Belgium played like this, a bit more deep, a bit more cautious, because De Bruyne was not fully fit, or maybe because they just thought we can hit them a bit more on the counter-attack like they did in that first half. And then if you score one of those two chances and you're in the lead, and then you can wait for Italy to come at you, maybe that's your game plan. And in the end, you reflect on the game thinking, okay, Barella scored a great goal, a great shot. He can try that shot again, not sure how many times he scores it. And it's the same for Insigne in a way. I know this is a bit of the Insigne special, but he had a lot of work to do before and it's still a great shot. And that's how you got, in a way, you got beaten. Although I thought Italy were the better team and they deserved to go through fully, no problem.
I go back to this point about the Italy haven't been tested yet trope, which, and part of me says, okay, so Italy went and Muller'd Switzerland 3-0. And then France and Spain obviously had a really difficult time against Switzerland. Yeah. So I'm not sure about that. But in terms of the approach, the letting Italy have the ball and sitting deep, letting Italy attack you, I'm surprised because it was the game plan in the first four games from the opposition.
Yeah.
And I thought Belgium had the quality to actually try and do something a little bit different. Mm. And they didn't. And maybe it's because Tielemans is not having a great tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't as confident there. That did surprised me a little bit, and I think that ended up working against Belgium. The penalty with Doku, I don't have a problem. I thought it was the first moment Doku came alive.
Yeah,
Di Lorenzo is really quick and really athletic. Doku's just quicker, and
so quick.
You know, it was one of those things where you put your arm out. I think he's going so quickly. I don't think he took a dive. He didn't do anything to stay up. But that has to be sanctioned by a foul.
Yeah, I think.
So. I agree.
I agree.
You know, we often don't see it given, but for me, I have no problem with that penalty.
No, me neither. And just on Doku quickly, because he's still a very young player. He moved from Anderlecht to Rennes in Ligue 1 when he was only 18, 30 million euros. It's a lot of money. He struggled a little bit at the start of the season to just adapt himself and to get to his best. But then in the last maybe 2 or 3 months of the season, we saw he got a bit more confidence, more maturity, more composure on the ball, and he was great. And I just think he can play right or left. I'm sure he can even play behind a striker or even on his own up front. He needs to be better in finishing and the last pass and stuff. But he's got so much ability.
Well, this is the thing. He ran the show in the second half, right? I thought, for Belgium. Here you've got this kid, 19 years old, only has a couple caps, and he is running the show. And he is terrifying the Italian defense. This is what I love about the Euros, is that you get these people. Obviously, we'd heard of Doku because you hear about young players and whatever. You don't get to see him as much. You know, didn't necessarily do that much with Rennes this year because he's still developing until the latter half of the season.
Yeah.
And then they come in and, you know, any old Doku can go and totally disrupt a game. I love that.
Yeah.
It takes you don't see that in club football. It's... what's the story? Is there a story behind it? Because I was surprised when he moved to Rennes, of all places. And I thought, 30 million euros, I would assume, is probably close to Rennes' club record.
It is. It is their record signing.
It is a ton of money to pay for a teenager.
Yep.
Is there a...
They just think that in 2 years' time, it'd be worth twice the price, and they would sell him for 60 million. And I think they're right. And I think if he keeps improving the way he's been doing this season, because it's been really interesting to see his development over the season in a league that is better than the Belgian league, but still not as good as the top league, where he will end up eventually, without a doubt. And that was great. And I think that quarterfinals will give him so much confidence going back to Rennes next season. And I think, again, you will see him improving and develop. I think give him 2 years and he will go to a much better club, whether that's in France or abroad, but there's no doubt. He's so good. You know what, like, quickly, I love that the two Italian goal scorers are Barella from Sardinia, and we know the relationship between Italy and Sardinia. I mean, Sardinians almost have their own language, to the point that some people say it's not really Italian. And Insigne, who comes from Naples. And again, you know the relationship between Naples and certainly the north of Italy. And for me, that they're the heroes, which is great because it shows that this is a country as a whole and it's fantastic, but they're the unlikeliest heroes. You agree with me or not? In the sense that they're not your favorite Italian sons, because one is from Napoli, not from Naples, which is usually slagged off by the rest of the country, especially the north, and Sardinia, quite the same.
I don't think Sardinia gets slagged off. It's my own view. I don't think Sardinia gets slagged off. Sardinia,
maybe not.
Sardinia is different.
That's a difference.
It was an independence movement and so on. I think Barella is the kind of guy everybody likes. There's a long history, actually. I mean, Gianfranco Zola, obviously famously from from Sardinia. Gigi Riva, Italy's greatest ever player, not from Sardinia, but moved there very young and won a title at Cagliari. I think Sardinia is a bit different. Now, Naples is more complicated, but Naples has given Italy so many talented players from Cannavaro on down, both Cannavaros actually, over the years. It's funny, in writing my piece, I talked about the sort of, this is Belgium's golden generation. We touched upon it again. I feel a little bit of ownership of this because I wrote a piece for The Times 11 years ago.
11 years, that is.
Not because I'm Nostradamus, but because I said, hey, there's all these super hyped players, and they were all very young at the time that you heard of, and it was Lukaku and Hazard and De Bruyne and others like Nainggolan and I heard of it.
De Vrij was only 21 then,
And it got me wondering, can they do something? And, it's funny because we talk about generations, and I don't think they're done. The World Cup is 18 months away.
Yeah.
Right? De Bruyne is not going to be, if he's fit, he's not going to be an old man in 18 months.
No.
Jeremy Doku and Youri Tielemans are what? Tielemans, my thoughts on the guy.
Yeah.
I think he's phenomenal, right? These guys are young players still. Doku, very young, obviously.
It's really only Vermaelen and Vertonghen. I'm sure even Alderweireld would be at the World Cup.
Yeah, the question. Can they find other people? Can Boyata and Denayer step up? Can they find some other center back? I'd go further. Do they need to play with a back four, frankly?
Yeah, maybe. Although you saw Meunier and how Italy targeted Meunier with the ball without the ball.
You don't need to play Meunier.
No, I know, but...
But you got to find somebody else.
Find
Come on.
Yeah, do something
else. Maybe put some Dendonker at the back. And,
maybe.
I don't know. I think there's life in this
Belgium.
You're
right, definitely. And then they've got next generations coming through. I just think it's heavy, that golden generation tag, because you're only golden when you win something, and they've fallen short so far.
Spain and Switzerland, now I have to reveal something about the hat.
Yeah.
The hat was taken for me. So I cannot take credit for Switzerland.
What? For going to pens? To be knocked out. Credit for to be knocked out.
Maybe
they knocked out my team. And then you do this, Switzerland. You beat us. And then you go to the penalties and we all expect you to win again. And then you lose.
My hat was taken by some Spanish speakers. That's all I can say. And I wasn't able to influence the game as much as I would have liked. Maybe with the hat, Remo Freuler doesn't get sent off.
Yeah.
But I just need to talk about this a little bit, right? Because that changed the game.
Completely.
And there's some people who, it's like, in Europe, like, so you have to give that as a red card because it's dangerous and reckless. If that's the way you see it, that's fine. But have Michael Oliver decide that. This was 100% something that should have gone to an on-field review.
Go and have a look. It cost you nothing.
I don't know what the conversation was between Kavanaugh and Michael Oliver.
Right. It must have been, you don't need to see it. It's...
But why? Well, I'm sorry. It's a quarterfinal of the Euros. There's so much at stake here. You're not refereeing Burnley against Palace and week match, weekday 35 of two mid-table teams.
Yeah.
You're refereeing something that really, really matters. And for you, Chris Kavanaugh, to make that decision, I think it's just unconscionable. I don't care if you're applying the letter of the law. Let the referee, Michael Oliver, the guy who's an actual referee and is good enough to actually be there rather than being locked in a VAR booth, let him make the decision.
We know what Kavanaugh was not on the pitch. Yeah, exactly.
It's a purely subjective decision. Let the referee make the decision. If he still interprets it, that's fine.
Yeah.
He owns it. That's fine.
And Switzerland had just scored, and they were clearly on on the up, having come back into the game. And I think that obviously caused them, because then they played the game differently to go to penalties. But I'm with you completely. That made no sense whatsoever what they did.
The What struck me about Spain is I was disappointed. You know, I've been on the Lucho bandwagon.
Yeah, me too.
And I would have thought, okay, early goal. I thought it was very unlucky, the own goal.
Zakaria, yeah.
And I thought, all right, you're fine. You're good now, right?
But is it because they scored too early? Do you even unconsciously at some point say, like, you know what? We're 1-0 up. This is enough.
These are professional Let's footballers, control. Man. Like, I don't...
Every time they try to control a lead, Croatia, Poland, and now Switzerland, they fell short because I don't think they can. I don't think they can just control on and not attack, for example. I think they struggle in that time. I think Lucho struggles himself to know exactly what to do.
I mean, you can control an attack. Early. You can control an attack. You just keep the ball. You've got you're the most technically gifted team in the tournament.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got. In fact, probably in terms of passing and keeping the ball, they're probably even better than France because France has Conte in there and Pavard and people can't play. So not Conte can't play, but it just really struck me. It really shouldn't be that difficult to do. Maybe you don't add to your lead, but you should still be creating chances. Switzerland has to come at you at some point. In the end, Switzerland's equalizer was fortuitous.
Yeah,
people had a go at the central defenders. I think that's a bit harsh. I think they were unlucky.
Yeah,
they made the right movements.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just, but I like that Switzerland didn't give up. They didn't give up against France. They kept going. They kept going again in that game. They got that goal, which could have been so important. In the end, it wasn't so important because of the red card that followed a minute later or 2 minutes later, whatever it was. But I just love that, and I feel a bit for Switzerland because I think they could have won that quarterfinals and get one more, and they would have deserved it.
And as an Italy fan, I would have loved to have played Switzerland again.
I'm sure you would.
In the other half of the draw, Denmark beating the Czech Republic. I think obviously Denmark. We've talked about the fairy tale aspect of it and all the goodwill and Eriksen and whatever, and it was a perfect start. The early goal. I've seen the Czech Republic in person twice in this tournament, and they really are slow starters. It's like they've been more dynamic in their last games, but I kind of wish that they'd played from the beginning. You know, it was almost as if that first goal should have jarred them awake, and they were like, "Oh no, it's fine. We'll sort this out in the second half." You know, and they got one back in the second half. And
yeah, true, but they struggle when you press them. They're not a playing team anyway. So I think the more you press them, the longer they will play. And if Kremenchik is not there, you can play as long as you want on Patrick Schick. He's not going to take you anywhere. And that's why I thought the first half was so perfect for Denmark, the way they pressed, the way they played with the ball, and the Czech could not get near them. And they could easily have scored a third one.
Yeah.
Denmark. And then the second half, you put Kremenchik on and Janko and all of that, and it comes a different game. Also, where I'm a bit worried for Denmark, they look tired, I thought, in that second half. They certainly didn't have the same energy. Coming straight from the break, that's where they struggled. That's where Schick scored his goal really early on. And it was the same against Belgium. There's a few games where we saw them, because they play with so much energy and intensity, that I think physically they struggle. And against England, that could cost them a lot in the second half.
Our boy Thomas Delaney scoring a goal, then almost afterwards nearly scoring another one.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe this is also a game where Thomas Suchek creates so many matchup problems for people just because he's so big and he can play.
So intelligent, yeah.
And he's intelligent and he's mobile. I mean, he's like a bigger, more physical. He's somewhere in between Milinkovic-Savic and Lampard, I think, in some ways, right?
Yeah, and Fellaini to a certain extent, too.
Yeah. Fellaini, better hair, obviously.
Yeah.
But I thought against this three-man defense and the way they match up and the way they match up physically, I thought it was easy for Denmark. Not easy, but it was going to always be tougher for Suchek.
Yeah.
Because he was never going to get a run on a midfielder tracking him. There was always going to be a big center half there.
Exactly.
And he wasn't going to overpower them physically, and it was going to be more difficult.
Yeah, and especially with Holles next to him, and Holles came off at halftime because he had had a dreadful first half compared to the game that he had against the Dutch, for example, which was so much better
than
them two when he scored, and those two played so well. This was very different. I love... I love Vestergaard and Christensen, and the way Christensen steps in midfield and he becomes a back four and a 4-3-3 formation. I think the Danes play with so much intelligence and tactical awareness that I think it's fantastic to see. And we saw maybe, again, one of the assists of the tournament for the Dolberg goal, and that Joachim Meyle outside of
the
his
Trivella.
Right. Yeah, the Quaresmele. The Quaresmele. And that was brilliant.
There you go.
Is it maybe the first tournament where we have so many great left backs? Spinazzola, Shaw, Mele. I was going to say Rabiot, but maybe not.
Yeah, Lucas Hernandez. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. I think you just stop at those two, frankly.
Yeah, that's
true. But England, we both live in London, in case you didn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Tons of excitement. It's coming two home. Consecutive tournaments in the semifinal because they went.
Great consistency.
They pasted Ukraine. Early goal. Everything played worked out for them, but it doesn't mean it's any less deserved. Early goal, Harry Kane off the score sheet, and then three goals, all headers, I believe, throughout the rest of the game. Ukraine looked very, very flat.
They look poor. I mean, maybe because you've got a game plan, and if you concede after 3 minutes, this is it. I mean, the game was over. We could have turned the TV off or left the stadium, and this was it. You knew they were not coming back. They had a couple of half chances in that first half because Walker made a mistake, and Pickford as well. You know my theory on that first goal, the Harry Kane goal. Harry Kane doesn't expect the ball to come there. I'm sorry. He doesn't ask for the ball. There's no movement of him. His body shape is the wrong way for where Sterling puts that ball. He reacts really well, and then it's a great finish. But I don't think he expects that ball to go there. Because if you see his movement, and I've watched the goal again so many times, you see he's almost surprised, and then he goes, oh, yeah. And then he pounces in and then scores the great goal. But so people are now talking about, oh, yeah, the linker play between Kane and Sterling. I'm not sure about that goal. But I thought that was England's best performance of the tournament, even better than Germany, because they were so solid and because Shaw was on great form and because they were created. I'm not sure about Sancho, but again, he'd played 6 minutes since the 22nd of May, so don't expect the best of him.
We'll be looking ahead to the matchups. Final word on Ukraine. As you know, I watched them against Sweden and they scored the dramatic. I thought that was a really, really physically taxing game for them. And what struck me a little bit, though, was this is a more technical team than a physical athletic team. And the only way that they were going to get back into the game after giving up early was going to be if somebody created something special.
Yeah.
And again, we saw Zinchenko play both wide and then coming back central, inside and whatever. Hey, it's too obvious, though. It was too obvious that it was going to be, you know, where the ball was going to come from. And I thought England did really well to go and keep them out.
Yeah, they did completely. They deserve a lot of credit, I think, for that performance.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, let's look ahead to the semifinals. Italy against Spain.
So good.
So much in the press right now about Luis Enrique facing Italy again because they were nose broken in 1994.
Your third team?
That would be Mauro Tassotti. It would have been cool if he played Ukraine because obviously Tassotti, Shevchenko's assistant.
Yeah.
I still remember there's an iconic picture of Luis Enrique after he got punched in the face. Of him, and it looks like he's wearing a Hannibal Lecter mask. He's got like this weird thing. I mean,
but there's the one as well with all the doctors on the pitch, and he's got the blood, and he's looking and clearly like shot names at.
I think Luis Enrique has moved past that, despite what some people think. Well. Here's let's try to game plan how we think this is going to go out. Because these are two teams who love having the ball.
Playing it.
So what happens in those situations?
I know it's a bit of a cliche, but bear with us. This is the perfect midfield battle key of the game. And I know we've said it for a lot of games, and it's very often right and accurate, but even more in this game. Whoever between the Koke, Pedri, Busquets midfield three, or the Barella, Verratti and Jorginho one, takes control, keeps the ball better, put the other midfield under pressure, will win the game, or will be very close to winning the game. And I think just for that, just watched on television, or if you're lucky enough to be in the stadium, and just watch those six just going at it with each other, because I think it's going to be fantastic. And yeah, of course you can play wide, and I think the fullbacks will have a big role to play too, but it will be there in that midfield, and whoever wins that battle and is the most dominant, I think will win.
I wonder if in a game like that, he's not going to do it. You'd be tempted to maybe move things around, maybe find a spot for Thiago Alcantara and maybe put Koke a little wider, so you've got four ballers in the middle of the park. Can you imagine if
you
did that?
You take out of one of your three forwards. It's okay. You can play Moreno and Morata, and then you're right. Move Koke a little bit wide, which he does at Atletico Madrid a lot.
No. And then later you chuck on, you know, Oyarzabal or Dani Olmo just for the speed for the one-on-ones. Again, don't think it's going to happen.
And Mancini is not going to change anything either, right? Why would he? Just Emerson for Smilazola and that's it.
This is my thing. So Mancini really, 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 really likes Emerson. All I can say he's very well rested. I don't think he gives you the attacking output of Spinazzola. He's not as fast as Spinazzola. He's not as good a defender, I think, as Spinazzola.
No, definitely not.
I would be tempted to try something different. You know, maybe a Toloi in there. I don't know that you necessarily, just accept. You can't ask Emerson to do what Spinazzola does, so maybe try something. I don't think it's going to happen.
You put Florenzi, so you've got another right back at left foot. You could have another right back at left back.
I think that's an option, but has he ever done that?
Not in Paris, I don't think so.
I mean,
maybe before, but
I don't know. It's a curious one. But look, the vibe is so good right now. Yeah. There is so much confidence, but I think they're also cognizant that Belgium was probably the toughest team they face in terms of ability, but Spain is going to be the toughest matchup, I think, in terms of style.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's going to play into it quite a bit. I'll also be curious to see Chiellini and Bonucci. Are we just going to take as granted that they're both going to be fit for another game?
But they played Morata, who they train with all season.
I know.
If there's one striker they know by heart, I mean, apart from Cristiano maybe, is Morata. So for them, I think it's perfect. And if you Mancini and Bonucci and Chiellini say, yeah, bring it on. We know exactly what to do to annoy him, to stop him, to everything. So that's unfair for Spain. That's unfair.
In the other game, England against Denmark. One thing that I'm curious of, Denmark, we've seen them play a back three in the last couple of games.
Yeah.
We've seen Southgate switch to a back three for Germany, but not do it for Ukraine. He's not going to do it. He's going to go. He's going to play the same lineup we saw, or the same shape anyway, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then maybe you change Sancho if you were not happy, or if you want a Foden or a Saka if he's back fully fit.
Well, he's been cleverly. Like he's always changed that position.
Yeah,
so
that's the one that would change. The other 10 would be exactly the same. That's the one that would change. I do think, as much as we love this Denmark team for the way they play, and of course the story and the Christian Eriksen incident and all of that, I think there's a point where they will face a wall, because this England team, they are a wall. And I wonder if, you know, the Damsinho and the Dolberg and the Mele and, you know, and the Delaney and all of that, at some point we go like, bam, against the wall. Bam, it's Phillips, it's Rice, it's Maguire. And to the point that at some point they will tire themselves out, and then England will just go and win that game.
The one thing I would wonder about, okay, Dolberg scored these goals. I don't think Dolberg's a great player. I think he's very up and down, as you know.
Yeah, he's a bit inconsistent.
I wonder if this is the kind of game where Denmark can turn it into kind of a grinded out game, and maybe it gets decided by a set piece. I've made this point before. When you've got Vestergaard, Kjær, Christensen, you've got three guys who are aerial threats. Højbjerg's another big dude.
Yeah.
Dolberg is a very big dude. Those are five big dudes on set pieces. And I'm just wondering, if England play the back four, once you get past Maguire, Stones, Kane, Declan Rice isn't small and physical.
But
I just wonder, in that aerial thing, I think I'm not suggesting that Denmark need to go back to aerial bombardment, But that can make it very awkward for England.
Yeah,
and I wonder if that is maybe one solution that Hjelmand, you know, unleash Damsgaard and Mele all you want wide, but then just hit them with the big bodies balls in the box.
Yeah, and I think I looked after the goal against the Czech Republic, the Delaney goal. I think they're third in terms of expected goals on set pieces in the tournament. So they're clearly very good at it. We saw the Delaney goal, how they worked, and there was a block, and he was on his own. I mean, the marking was terrible, but still. So I think they have that. And so do England. They're very strong on set pieces, as we saw again against Ukraine. So I think this would be a good matchup in terms of set pieces too. I just think that physically England are too strong for Denmark.
Yeah, on paper, I think no doubt England favourites. Italy, Spain, much more finely matched. Although I think the bookies have Italy as favourites.
I think that's right. That's right. I think Italy.
I don't need to go there. I don't need to make predictions. All right, enough Euros. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
It's finally done. Jadon Sancho is a Manchester United player. Reported fee of 85 million euros plus up to 4 in bonuses. Guys, don't at me about, 73 million, 80 million. Anything in the end, it was right around the 90 million package that Dortmund were looking for, maybe a little less. We don't need to talk about the deal again, but as of right now, Jules, give me the United lineup. All right, back four and goalkeeper, we know. Midfield up. Tell me, go.
That's interesting. There's a few options there for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think we start with, right at the top, I think Cavani will start the season up front. He will have Marcus Rashford on the left-hand side. He will have Jadon Sancho on the right-hand side. He will have Bruno Fernandes.
Martial, no longer your boy.
Martial is my boy, but for now, he can't expect to start the season.
All right.
And then that's where it gets complicated between Fred. I cannot believe I'm saying between Fred, McTominay, and Pogba.
And Matic.
I knew you were going to come with your boy Matic. It would be Pogba and McTominay for me. This is it. This is what I want to see. McTominay and Pogba, Bruno, Sancho, Rashford.
You know what's going to happen if he does that? It's the second that they give up a goal, right? Oh, Pogba in a two. Oh, Pogba can't play in a two. Oh, look at Pogba. He's being lazy again.
But then they're going to go and score three. They're going to go and score three. And you know, I still think that they've got money left in their budget to go and get Declan Rice.
I think there will be other people.
You get Declan Rice and you put Pogba next to him and then you've got that front four that I mentioned. And then you're good. You're perfect. Media in Italy are reporting that Jorge Mendes, Gab, is on his way to Turin to discuss Cristiano Ronaldo's contract extension. I mean, come on.
Okay. So
surely not.
Extending Cristiano's contract doesn't make sense for Juventus, and it doesn't make sense for Cristiano. Right now.
Right now,
I'm not saying he can't play. I'm not saying he shouldn't be there next season. Just that there's no reason for either one to do it right now. And Daniele came out and said, he came up with this thing. He made it sound like it was very scientific. Well, you know, the COVID-free MPV for Cristiano is positive. People are like, COVID-free NPV. I think what he means is COVID-free net player value, which is basically accounting sleight of hand. It doesn't mean anything because COVID was real and they did get a hit. And the net player value, you can put whatever because you add brand value and whatever. It's all nonsense. I don't blame him for saying it. I would have said the same thing if I was Agnelli. But I think from Juve's perspective, from Cristiano's perspective, best thing to do is wait. It's as simple as that.
I agree.
Argentina spanked Ecuador 3-0 with goals from Rodrigo de Paul, Lautaro Martinez, and who else? Lionel Messi. Jules, that free kick was pretty sweet.
It was. That's his second of the tournament as well. He's one goal, just one behind that, 76, one behind Pelé, who with 77 has the record of the most goals scored by a South American player on the international scene. So I think he's fantastic. I don't think he's maybe played as well as this for Argentina, certainly for a long time. And I think it's great to see they're so strong collectively compared to maybe past tournaments. I really believe that they can win this. Imagine Argentina winning this and Messi in Brazil. Even if there's no fans, I don't care. Even if it's a fake Copa America, I don't care. Or a plastic one, I don't care. It would be very special.
That's a story and a half.
It would be so. And returning to Messi, he's now officially unemployed, Gab. No club, no money coming in, and a free agent. And still, Gab, no reason for Barca fans to worry, right? He's going to extend. He's going to sign a new one.
Listen, I went on the Barcelona website.
Did you?
FCBarcelona.cat or whatever the hell it is.
You can't find his shirt.
Of course you can. You go to his club shop.
He's not a player there anymore.
You can find a 2021-22 season, the new Barcelona shirt.
No.
With Lionel Messi's name on the back. You know what? I have an idea, Barcelona. Why don't you do it? For all sorts of players who are out of contract.
Hey, yeah.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad shout,
Chiellini,
right?
Do you want Chiellini, Barcelona, number three? Yeah, go on, four, five, yeah?
You know what? Honestly, why not?
I know.
Why not have a Cristiano Ronaldo contract? Right, why not have a Cristiano Ronaldo shirt?
Now, Messi is not more a Barca player than a PSG, Manchester City.
Unless
there's something that we don't know.
Because there's so many known unknowns. What if hypothetically Messi said, like, all right, I haven't signed the contract, but... Until I sign the contract, feel free to keep making money using my likeness because I'm not making money for another club. Is that possible?
Maybe,
I don't know.
Of course.
I know. It's the many
it's
mysteries.
Weird. He's not
many mysteries of Barcelona. Brazil also advanced to the Copa America, but Jules, that was a rough ride against Chile, and it was ugly from Gabriel Jesus.
It was. It was a really bad red card. It's a Sadio Mane v. Ederson, if you remember, where he looks at the ball and then turns around and then puts his feet really high to, I think, control the ball, except I didn't see the Chile defender behind him and caught him on the face or on the neck. So red card straight away. Straight after the break, straight after Brazil scored their first goal. So it was tough, even at 11-11 for them.
With your man, Lucas Paqueta.
Lucas Paqueta scored a lovely goal
Maybe
too.
He's not a packet, as we used to.
No, and he came on a halftime for Firmino because it was not working out for Brazil. We saw Neymar in a more central, more advanced position that I don't think suits him well. But listen, I think this would be very useful for Brazil to have had such a tough game going into the semi-final. Reports in Germany suggest that Leon Goretzka said nine again to Bayern's offer for a new contract. Are we heading to another David Alaba situation, or is he just going to get more money and sign?
Okay, so I don't think they will because I think the situations are different. Goretzka came to Bayern, I believe it was either free transfer or it was from Schalke. So presumably he was highly paid. Alaba was at Bayern basically for his entire career, which those situations get less money. Goretzka, as far as I know, didn't get a Pini Zahavi to represent him. So I don't think it's going in that direction where he's making crazy demands, but it is a concern every day that passes. I think this will get sorted. It should get sorted.
It would be.
Jose Mourinho has taken over at Roma and began his reign by saying that, quote, he has been a victim of his own success and honesty. Jules, you can't argue with him, can you?
Man, I was just waiting for the punchline.
His biggest crime is being too kind.
Yeah, too good, too amazing, too kind. I knew there was a punchline coming up. I was waiting for it. This is great for Mourinho, who's obviously he's bad now, but not of his own demise. It's not his fault.
He helped. He even mentioned Luke Shaw, I think, and said like, "Oh, my honesty with Luke Shaw helped make him the player he is today."
Yeah, of course. It's always thanks to him and never his fault. Tottenham's new director of football, Fabio Paratici, spoke to Sky Italia. Sky Sports Italia gave a long interview, and he said that he hasn't talked yet to Harry Kane, but hopes to keep him at the club. And he says that while they were talking to a lot of managers, Nuno was always the best one because he did a fantastic job at Wolves. Yeah, of course. Of course, Fabio.
If you watch the TV very, very closely, you see his nose get a little bit longer as it comes out. He also said that Paul Pogba was never close to rejoining Juventus. I can kind of believe him
on
that one.
Me too, yeah.
For a number of different reasons. Look, in the end... He tried to push a Mendes guy in Rino Gattuso, and instead he ends up with a different Mendes guy.
Exactly.
Guy who knows the Premier League better. We've shared our thoughts on Nuno. I think it's time to move on.
Yeah.
Jules, Patrick Vieira returns to the Premier League. He is in charge now of Crystal Palace. It's all official. Cesc Fabregas, who knows a thing or two about Patrick Vieira, having played with him for a long time, having played against him when Patrick Vieira was at Nice, he says their style of play will be, quote, the complete opposite to what they were playing under Roy Hodgson. What does he mean?
He means that he won't be defensive-minded like Roy Hodgson was, that it's not just about being very, very well-drilled and organised. It's more about playing with the ball, being attacking. It didn't always play like that in Nice. Trust me, some games were really boring and you could not really see what the identity of the team was, but certainly that's what he wants to do with his teams.
Pretty passing.
Yeah, exactly. So good luck with this Crystal Palace team that I'm not sure has that in their DNA. Good luck with rebuilding the team, rebuilding the squad. But at least it's a fresh start because a lot of new players, new manager with his ideas, he will be there on time for pre-season, which is really good. So,
how cool would it be if he brought Cesc Fabregas back as a player assistant coach?
How would they pay him?
What?
Like, I'm not.
I think he only has a year left at Monaco.
Yeah, but he earns way more than
I think Cesc has made
Palace.
Enough money in his career, no?
Well,
can I tell you a funny story about Cesc?
He likes the life in Monaco as well, I can tell you that.
Who doesn't? But can I tell you a funny Cesc-related story?
And he's too good for Crystal Palace. Go on.
So many, many years ago, when Cesc was 18, I think, it was his first full season as a starter, towards the end of the season, I went out to lunch with him and a Spanish colleague, Guillaume Balaguer.
Yeah.
And we meet up, and we're on our way to the restaurant, the three of us, and we get stopped on the street, and somebody's like, oh, I'm sorry, can I take a picture? Can I take a picture? And we're like, sure. And so Cesc, the guy takes his phone and he hands his phone to Cesc. The guy wanted to take a picture with me and Guillaume Balaguer, which I thought was hilarious. And I'm like, you know who this is, right? He's like, yeah, Cesc Fabregas. So I'm not doing the British. You go, yeah, the guy was obviously, look, I'm not such a minority, lovely guy.
He's one of our friends.
Friend of the show. Okay. And Cesc, if you're watching, come back. Come back on the show. I mean, what do? You don't do much in Monaco anyway, right? You got a lot of free time.
We can go and see him. When I interviewed him a few weeks ago, he said, come and see me when you can travel to Monaco. So we should go and maybe go to the Formula One Grand Prix, watch a game at Louis II, then spend a bit of time there. You and I play at the casino.
Absolutely. I go to Monaco every year. So,
yeah, that's good, man. Reports in Spain suggest that Real Madrid could take Donny van de Beek on loan from Manchester United and maybe have that in a package for Rafael Varane going the other way or something. And we know that van de Beek had agreed terms with Real Madrid before going to Manchester United. What a great idea it was for him to go to Manchester United, by the way. Does this all make sense to you, Gab?
No, it makes zero sense. I mean...
They don't need midfielders, that's for sure.
So unless you like Van de Beek enough and you say, I'm going to get him, rehabilitate him. But then if it is going to be part of the Varane deal, then just say, hey, we'll give you Varane, you give us Van de Beek. You know, case closed.
Bit of money as well.
What do you mean, Van de Beek plus money? Or Van de Beek plus money or whatever?
Van de Beek plus money, yeah.
I mean, Varane has a year left on his contract, whatever. I mean, whatever, you need to have the wages bounce out. But you do it that way. You don't take him on loan where if Van de Beek plays really, really well... Maybe United might want him back. Maybe they might sell him to somebody else, you know. So that part, from Real Madrid's perspective, doesn't make sense. Also, you already have midfielders.
Where does he fit? Kroos, Modric, Casemiro, Valverde, Odegaard.
You can always use another guy, but, like, this makes very, very little sense to me.
Yeah.
I do think Van de Beek would benefit from going on loan somewhere.
Well, yeah, he's not going to play.
Just maybe not Real Madrid. Yeah. Maybe we can send him to Sevilla with our boy Lopetegui.
Oh, nice. You know, that would be so perfect.
Former Real Madrid manager.
Yeah, you know it would be perfect.
Or Everton.
Oh,
I wouldn't mind seeing him there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, many don't like the format for this Euro, saying that it gives teams who get to play at home an unfair advantage.
I know.
Jules, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't like it. I didn't like it. It's no surprise and no coincidence that the four teams in the semi-final all played their group stages at home. Right, you agree?
You sorted Hungary, so what?
Hungary played the third game in Munich, by the way.
Okay, all right. Close enough.
I think it was an unfair advantage because you had your fans, because you didn't have to travel, because you were in your HQ, your Clairefontaine, your whatever your national team stay. And I think that's a big help, especially in a post-COVID season or in a COVID season at the end of a very long season. I think that helped. Maybe not enough.
Has
to be an excuse for winning and losing? No, but I think it was an advantage.
Hasn't everybody been in their HQ, though?
No.
And just traveling up to games?
No. France spent like 9 days in Budapest in the Marriott Hotel. It's not the same as being in St. George's Park.
Oh, yeah, and everybody didn't really like the Marriott Hotel.
No, they didn't like it, but that's another point. And again, I don't think it's an excuse for winning.
I like Marriott. I'm part of the Marriott Bonvoy Rewards.
And he did Marriott send it our way. I don't think it's a full excuse for winning or losing. I'm not saying that. I just still think that it was an advantage for the teams at home to have that kind of scheduling than for the ones who didn't.
How many games apart were France's games in Budapest?
4 days, 5 days. Yeah, they could have come back. But
yeah, but that's because your boy, the little Deschamps, decides not to, right?
Well, it's not.
You can easily charter a plane, go back to Clairefontaine, sleep in your own bed.
No, you can. But still, going back and forth is not ideal either. That's why it's much better if you have all your games. Look, the four semi-finalists have all played all their games at home. That's not a coincidence. I know you disagree, but it was not a good idea for Michel Platini, and it would never be done again. That's why it's not a good idea. If it was a good format, trust me, it would happen again, and it would never happen again because people know it's not a good format. Barcelona have started their fire sale to raise cash, or try to raise cash. Trincao is on his way to Wolves, first as on loan, Gab, with a option to buy for 30 million euros. I'm sure you're shocked. I'm sure you're very surprised.
I am absolutely shocked. even the option to buy for 30 million euros, isn't that roughly what they paid for him to sign him in the first place?
Come on.
He's not a terrible player. Maybe a bit different at Wolves. But this reads exactly for what it is.
Yeah.
It's a situation where the guy's agent, and I'm going to word it very carefully, in one of the biggest conflicts of interest out there, which nobody cares about. Nobody seems to care about this, right? A partner in his agency, one of his shareholders, is also the majority owner of Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's unhealthy. It's good for Barcelona. I mean, I don't even know if it's good for Barcelona. Couldn't Barcelona, if they're so desperate for cash, I'm sure you could find somebody else who could give you some money for Trincao. He's not terrible.
No.
Right? I don't know what this is, but it's not good.
It's not good at all.
There's just something about him.
Yeah.
Junior Firpo, speaking of Barcelona people's want-aways, is very close to a move to Leeds United for 15 million. That seems a reasonable price.
That is a reasonable price, Gab. I think he can learn a lot with Bielsa. He can play on both sides, right back or full back. I think he's an interesting player that certainly plays with a lot of energy. You know, he's quick and fits what you would think Bielsa is looking for a fullback. So this one makes sense. And meanwhile, Gab, there's more on the Barcelona.
We're really not picking on Barcelona.
No,
it's just that there's a lot of players for sale.
According to reports, you can take home Coutinho for 30 million euros and Miralem Pjanic is free. Here you go.
You just got to pay his wages.
Enormous wages. But who would take both of them? Either of them.
No, I don't think anybody's going to make a permanent move for Coutinho because he hasn't proven his fitness. I think the best thing you can hope for with Coutinho is a loan deal where you pay part of his wages.
Big wages, again, which is a problem if you want to buy him anyway.
Yeah, I think fit Coutinho has something to give. But nobody knows if he's fit. So
yeah.
I think that's going to be the obstacle there. Pjanic, again, on a free, if you can go to, I think he's got 2 years left on his deal, or is it three? I'm sure he's on big wages.
He is.
Yeah, the difficulty here, because the thing to do here would be you take him, you say, Pjanic, you've got 2 years left or 3 years left. Let me give you a 5-year deal. We will spread out that money because you're never going to play at Barcelona. But he's not going to go for that.
No,
so you would need to find him a home, you know, 1 year on loan, and then you try to work out a deal. But I hope he plays somewhere because I want to see him play because he's not a terrible footballer.
No, he's not. But we knew that this Arthur Pjanic swap deal, a bit dodgy, a bit weird, was completely crazy and it proved to be.
How cool would it be if they just swapped them back?
For 80 and 70 million again.
Wow. Well, seriously, like,
they could. Nothing's stopping them. I'm surprised they haven't even done it already.
Arthur, I put him out of my mind, man. Lucas Hernandez will be having surgery, Jules. Kind of a moot point for France, but what's the update for Bayern fans?
Yeah, on his knee, Gab, the knee that he injured during the Euros. They said it's only a few weeks, so I would suspect that he would be back maybe at the beginning of September. He would miss the preseason and probably the start of the Bundesliga season. But then after that, they didn't seem too worried and that it was going to be too serious.
This is not related to the many, many, many injuries he's had in his career.
No, I don't think so. It doesn't look like it.
Because on a million euro transfer fee per games played, he's probably the most expensive player in the history of humanity.
Okay. No, I know.
Just checking.
No, you're right. Inter are hoping to finally sell João Mário, one of the worst transfers in their history, and get maybe 7.5 million euros back for him from Benfica, or maybe from Sporting. Where he played on loan last season, didn't he?
No, they could ruin the deal. So basically, for some reason, when Sporting don't want him for 7.5 million, but the deal here is when they did the move, he can't be sold he can't be sold to a Portuguese club other than Sporting,
right,
unless Inter pay a 30 million euro penalty clause.
Why would you agree to that?
You're asking me why about Inter's transfer dealings over the year, from Vidal to Gabigol to João Mario, we're talking about, to Valentino Lazaro risen from the dead. God. You really going to make me go there? I don't know, but they've clearly painted themselves in a corner. And you talk about incentives. If Sporting are the only Portuguese club who can buy him without Inter taking a massive loss on him, effectively, they can kind of name their price and undermine this. It just makes no sense to make a deal with Benfica.
That's so strange.
You can't sell him anywhere else because nobody else wants him. I just said, like, it's mind-boggling that you would put this in there.
Yeah. Crazy.
Marseille are turning into a little Arsenal colony. First, Matteo Guendouzi.
Yeah.
Then, William Saliba. Is that it, or is there more to come?
I don't think
that. Should Steady Eddie be packing his bags? No.
No, I don't
Callum
think
Steady Chambers,
Eddie.
Perhaps? No.
I'm not sure. Maybe Bellerin, but...
Oh, Maitland-Niles? No? Is he still an Arsenal player?
He is still an Arsenal player.
What about Geoffrey Rennes-Adelaide? Is he... No?
No.
Double-barreled.
He's in Lyon.
Okay.
But
Leno moves now? No?
No, because they're going to get Paulo Lopez from Roma. Very active Marseille right now, and Longoria, the president, I was going to say sporting director, he's doing everything there. Cengiz Zunda has arrived on loan from Roma. Paulo Lopez
Undertaker.
Is next.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's exciting as well. Guendouzi is pretty much done. A loan with an option to buy for Rani.
So what's the Marseille to Roma link?
Well, they're looking for loans with options to buy. So not many clubs. Well, right now they clearly thought that they wanted a goalkeeper. I think he knows Paulo Lopez really well. They're both being Spaniards, Longoria and Lopez. I think he likes Cengiz Zunda. Maybe because he tried to sign him for Valencia all those years ago when he was sporting director.
What do you need Paul Lopez for?
Mandanda is 36, going 37 now. One year left on his contract. Their second goalkeeper, Johan Pelé, has left. So they need a backup and maybe someone who can put a bit of competition with him.
So you're going to sign Paul Lopez, who is on Roma wages, which aren't Real Madrid wages, but they're still substantial wages, to challenge Mandanda for the number one job?
Yeah, that's the idea. Genius
here, right?
I'm not sure Sampaoli is very, very keen on
Steve.
Yeah. I know. Plenty of reports out there that Borussia Dortmund are looking to Daniel Malen from PSV Eindhoven to replace Jadon Sancho. We've talked about that, I think, a couple of weeks ago, Gab. You were not keen. Are you still not keen? You still not think it's a good idea? Because I think it's a good idea.
I don't think it's... I don't.
Look, what?
It looks to me like they're doing this thing where they just keep adding young players. You can never earn enough. You know what? Already last season, you had a situation where you had so many younger attacking players and they weren't getting on the pitch. They weren't getting regular playing time. I don't think Marco Rosen is necessarily going to... You don't want to put him in a position where he has to rotate all the time. Yeah, you need depth. But Malen at 30 million. 30 million post-pandemic is a serious investment.
You just got 90 for Sancho.
That's fine. Go and spend it on other people and other positions that you need to strengthen. But when you look at the options that you have in that attacking midfield wide position, you're going to want to get more minutes for Moukoko next year. Obviously, you've got Haaland, and that takes care of the forwards. In case you're thinking of Malen as a forward, right?
You can play him. You can play them both together up front. You can play him wide. He started wide, then he played more centrally last season and with Haaland. But
you got Gio Reyna, you've got Julian Brandt, you've got these guys who are different.
Brandt is for sale.
You got Marco Royce. I know, but who's going to sign
40
him?
He's 40 years old.
But it's the usual thing. Who's going to sign? The other kid what's the name of the kid who started in the guy who never played for the first team and then he started in the Champions League?
Oh, I think it's it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what are we talking about? There's somebody else
I
forget.
I know.
Oh, you got Hazard? I mean, what?
Yeah. No, maybe, but. I think Donny Malen at 30 million is a good opportunity.
I'm going
to
send a warning to Dortmund, right? I know we in the media, we look at this and we say, oh, they're so brilliant. They're so good. Oh, they're so good at developing young players. Oh, fantastic, right? What they do very well is they buy the best young players out there. They have them for a couple of years because these guys are good. Many of these guys make it. Many of these guys do not make it. Many of these guys get it wrong.
Yeah,
and I think
no, I
you should
you.
Look at why they don't, right? Because for every one of these guys, there's an Alexander Isak, there's a Daoud, there's a whole range of people that they spent serious money on.
Yeah, of course.
It's and it's difficult with youngsters.
Working out.
But you should put them in a situation where I think where they have a chance to succeed. And I don't know that chucking Malen, and Malen is much more of a finished player. He's not a kid.
No.
He's a finished player.
That's why.
That's why it's odd to me.
Yeah, but Jorena maybe he's not ready to play 60 games next season, whereas Daniel Malen is. So you could give more time to those young ones without so much pressure, and still have a player like Daniel Malen on your books.
I don't know. I mean, fan of Malen, not a fan of this. Anyway, Colombia beat Uruguay on penalties and will now face Argentina in the Copa America semifinal. Jules, did you like that Yerry Mina was so confident? He started celebrating midway through the shootout and doing his little dance.
I mean, if you like it or not, but
did he lose count?
No. I think he was really confident.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't lose count when. Well, how? Well, you can't count to five.
Well, he was like the third penalty, right?
Yeah.
Third or fourth penalty, right? But it was just funny. He scores. Like, they're not finished yet.
No, I know, but like, I just thought
you can't control what the other guys are going
to
do.
Oh, no, okay. Do you like the fact that you don't have extra time and you go straight to pens?
I don't mind it at all. I don't mind it either. Especially with COVID and stuff. It's more of a TV show. I love games where you're there and it's special and it's the tension and so on, and you play that extra 30 minutes. I don't have
that. Yeah, no. And we've had great, part of it. Like in the Croatia-Spain game, we would have had that kind of extra time.
Yeah.
But then the Spain-Switzerland extra time was boring. You could have gone straight into penalties.
Precisely. But it is part of the drama and build-up. Yeah. No, I don't need to go straight. I mean, leave it for like the FA Cup and stuff like that.
True. It was a wild one between Peru and Paraguay. 3-3, Gab, deflected goals, very late goals. And then, as we said, no extra time, straight into the penalty shootout. And Peru, who won on penalty and, to be fair, deserved to go through. Your boy, Ricardo Gareca, doing an amazing job again. And does he have what it takes to beat Brazil now in the semifinal, do you think?
I mean, look, people who know the Copa America know that you love it in part because of these characters, these tremendous. Oh, Sampaoli was a big part of it when he was there. Ricardo Gareca's definitely one.
Nice.
Tabárez as well.
And his crutches.
Limping around. Yeah. But I guess he's permanently on. I mean,
he has to be helped.
It's tremendous. Seeing Christian Cuevas missed the penalty as well, which I was never expecting.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic entertainment. It's not what you expected because Paraguay, you know, you're kind of used to the nil-nil Paraguay grind-out draw.
Really. Especially without Almirón.
They took the lead and everything, whatever.
La Padula was good. It was really good.
Gio La Padula, yeah. Obviously, you know, half Italian, so I got to have a go for that.
Maybe more than
but,
half.
Did you say more than half?
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Is it?
Well, he spent more time short in Italy than in Paraguay in his whole life, no?
Peru, you mean?
In Peru than in Italy. In Peru, no?
I suppose he did, yeah. Yeah, it's whatever. I mean, you know, he identifies as both. He likes his Peruvian food. I think if you were to ask him, is pisco sour Chilean or Peruvian, he would tell you that it's definitely. Peruvian. He likes his ceviche, you know. Nothing wrong with that. But no, it's fun. I'm really looking forward to this Peru-Brazil game. And I wonder, obviously Brazil without Gabriel Jesus, I wonder psychologically if they're a little bit, you know, because they were rolling at the start of the tournament.
They were great.
And I think the Chile game, this is not a particularly good Chile team.
No, not
right
at all.
Now.
Alexis Sanchez got injured pretty early.
So I wonder if that destabilizes them a little bit. So I think this could be very, very close.
It could be close.
Christian Pulisic was pictured in one of the most Florida videos ever that he put out on social media, or his social media managers did. He's on the side of a boat doing keepy uppies while wearing shoes, I might add, with a giant grouper beneath him that has been somehow caught and is somehow strapped, dying to the side of the boat. And then at one point, he actually falls into the water and then he's immediately pulled out.
Yeah.
He thought it was hilarious. They're all laughing, ha, ha, ha. Did it work for you?
Not really. I think he said almost like he almost died, near death experience. I don't think so. I mean, the grouper didn't even move once the tippy toes of Christian Pulisic went in the water.
The grouper is basically a cadaver at this point, right? Like,
I would hope that then they send him back into the water.
Please do get in touch. Did you release the grouper back into the water? Or like, did you?
I just thought it was
If you're fishing,
weird.
That's fine. You want to eat grouper, that's fine.
It was
but
really
like,
weird. I mean, did they go in thinking, because clearly they took a football on the boat, I suspect, because Pulisic in his head had the idea of, let's catch a big fish and then I could do keepy uppies over his head. And find otherwise, why would you take a football on your boat? I don't know. This is not my style. But maybe if the fisherman who washes.
Are you suggesting it wasn't entirely spontaneous and like it wasn't his like marketing team?
Maybe it's exciting to do that. I don't know. I've never caught fish to start with. Certainly not as big as that. So I don't know. Maybe that's his stuff. Maybe that's his thing. From one Christian to another, Gab, and we saw Christian Eriksen out and about on the beach in Denmark taking photos with fans. This is great to see.
Yeah, I saw the video of like some kid and he's out there. He's wearing a UV shirt, which I thought like, wow, does it really get that hot? Is the sun really beat down in Denmark? Like, hey, whatever works for you. No, but it is so nice to see him smiling. It looks entirely normal. I wonder if Denmark get to the final. Could he come to Wembley? How awesome would that be?
That would be amazing.
That would be really awesome. Think about it. I think that is one exemption most people. Man, he doesn't even need an exemption. Well, I guess he's not in the Denmark
he's
team
not in the bubble anymore.
But still,
come on, man. Like, you can make an exemption.
You made exemptions for all sorts of officials. Exactly. I think if there's somebody who deserves one, it's Christian Eriksen.
For sure.
Right, that brings us to an end. Jules, we got to come back and do this again on Thursday.
We would know who the finalists are.
I wonder if we can do it from Wembley. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be amazing. Let's see.
But until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.